Welcome to Dragons, Gazelles, and Unicorns. I'm Rosemary Truman, and I'm thrilled to have Joe Fold on the podcast today. Joe founded the Campaign Workshop. It's an advocacy and democratic political consulting firm based in Washington, D.C. in 2009, after having been a partner of MSHC Partners. Joe is known for his creativity and commitment to the causes and campaigns he works on. He has produced award-winning strategies for a long list of clients, including the American Cancer Society, Cancer Action Network, and DC Vote. Thank you so much, Joe, for being on the podcast today.
Happy to be here. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. The snow's melting. I think it's up to 50 degrees today, and everything's looking. You can see it's looking pretty bright out there. So I'd love to hear more about your background and your journey.
Sure. So I started out, I grew up in Rockland County, New York, about 25 miles north of New York City, went to school here in Washington, D.C., where I live now, went to school at the American University, and then went on the road and ran political campaigns for a long time. Wound up thinking that I was never going to work in Washington, D.C. until I was offered a job there, had been like a itinerant campaign manager, had been a chief of staff in New York State Legislature. And then in 1996, which is still a long time ago, I worked at the Democratic National Committee after being on the road for a while running campaigns, and then left the Democratic National Committee and really started into the world of advocacy and political advertising, and worked for a bunch of different companies, and then founded my own in 2009. I just went off on my own and started my own company with one employee. And now we have a dozen people who work for us. Company's called the Campaign Workshop, and it's a lot of fun.
What gives you joy every day about your company?
Well, I mean, there's a few things. One, I like the idea of working with causes, organizations, and candidates that are trying to change the world in some way and make the world better and do interesting things. So I love that. I also love the idea of working with employees to help them sort of solve problems and work through creative challenges. And, you know, I feel like as a president of a company, I have a few really core roles, and probably chief among them is to be a coach and to help people solve problems and work through problems that they have, which is great to one, create a better product. And it's nice being in the creative space where you get to brainstorm and work through different creative issues. But then the other thing is I find myself, the second job is sort of being recruiter in chief, is to find good people to come and work for me or to collaborate with. And so that's something also that I like to spend a lot of time on. It's been good. It's been a really fun journey and with interesting twists and turns. Yeah.
Well, I have to tell you, I feel completely blessed with my team. I mean, it's awesome to have a great team that can take on the world, basically. I think mine does. So I'm really thrilled to have a great team. What do you look for when you're recruiting?
Okay. Well, so, I mean, we look for a bunch of things. I mean, first is we look for traits, right? I think I've grown probably over the last 5 years to really focus on traits versus skills, right? And really thinking about, there's that great book, The Ideal Team Player, which, you know, where it really focuses on the idea of hungry, humble, and smart. And I think those are in an intersecting Venn diagram. And so when we're thinking about recruitment for people that are working for us directly, I'm thinking about that. We've done a lot around diversity and inclusion to really try and remove barriers from the way that we hire. So that includes, like, we have removed like college degrees as a requirement for every position in the company, and really think thoughtfully about how do we remove those barriers and be better at having a wide group of people. We've removed the idea that folks have to, during COVID, have to come into an office at all. And we redefined ourselves in March as a virtual company. We're gonna continue to do that. And we are recruiting for a few roles right now. And we've gotten rid of any requirement to live in the Washington, DC, Maryland, Virginia area, that people could live and work, you know, anywhere. So
So what are you recruiting for in case a listener wants to apply?
So we have a marketing lead job that we're currently recruiting for. There'll be probably some other hiring that I'll be doing towards the summer and fall, but that's a job that we were hiring for. And we do a lot of content as a company. So that marketing lead job's a pretty central job. We have a, you know, we have a blog where we have tens of thousands of people that come a month that come to our blog to read on content on advocacy and politics. So the person is in charge of that. We have a podcast that is growing. It's called How to Win a Campaign. And you can find that wherever you get your podcasts, but that's been growing. And then we also do content work for our clients, and this person will be involved in some of that content work. So it's a great job. We also have a paid internship program that we have two interns a semester that come through, and we are recruiting for our summer internship program. We'll likely have about 100 people that will apply for that. It's a pretty competitive program. And but yeah, so those are the kind of things that we're hiring for right now.
Well, we have a great suggestion for you on the intern. So I'll be back in touch later on that.
Yeah, please send them my way. We are always looking. So,
well, it's really interesting. You say you look for traits. I do too. And I look at the openness score. Like, we actually score people with a fluid intelligence test. And you know, if they're not really open-minded, then they'll not work well with me. And we also look at the troublemaker score because they actually have to be a little bit of a troublemaker.
Interesting.
And there's another score called agreeableness. Now, I prefer to be a little bit agreeable, but not too disagreeable. But occasionally that score, you need to have some people that are a bit disagreeable. So I don't get my way all the time.
And so, right. I mean, we could do this entire podcast on tactics for hiring, and I would love to hear about the scores. I mean, we do things where we start with a low bar test, right? Where we give people a very basic sort of test to go through. We also work in a creative environment with that has a lot of detail. So like one of the things we do is everyone who works at Campaign Workshop has to pass a proofing test, which it, to me, is like really important because we do digital advertising, direct mail. Those things can't go out with mistakes in them.
Right. Okay.
So everyone needs to know how to proof. And right. it's a skill that is kind of innate. You either are good at proofing or you're not.
Yes.
And you can't, you don't have that kind of detail, you're not going to be a good fit for us.
Well, I got two great right-hand guys that are great proofers. I'm just telling you that.
Yeah.
So you were talking about these twists and turns in your company. Give us one of your big twists and turns stories.
Right. I mean, I think when I started, I had visions of what like sort of the company would be and who would stay. And, you know, I had a like junior employee who I hired, and I had a friend who is still a great friend, who I thought may eventually become a partner in the business. And she left after 3 months of working with me and decided to take a different job. And the junior employee who I had on, right, like has now been with me for 10 years and has grown to be a senior vice president, right? You know, I had, like who I hired and why I hired has changed over the years, right? Mm-hmm. And I've been very, very lucky to have like, employees who would really engage me and call me on things. And over time, I think I have learned from that. And so part of it has been, I think when I started, I would look at resumes and I would say, oh, this person has a great resume, and as opposed to, again, hiring for traits. And a great story I have is another employee who's been with me for 9 years who, you know, didn't go to a great school, not a bad school, but didn't go to like a like name big name school, but he had been a canvasser on the Obama campaign. He was a good writer, but he was working in a door factory in Kokomo, Indiana.
Wow.
Running their like back end. I needed somebody who was a production assistant, right? That's what I needed. And I needed someone who understood, who could do a little bit of QuickBooks work, who understood FileMaker, and like, it was really, again, is the name of your show, like a unicorn. I was looking for someone who could do multiple little things. And this person could do those things. And there was someone else with a bigger resume who could do those things too. But one of the things that I had learned over the years is that peer interviews matter. And that, like, so I take a lot of stock in having the people who are going to be working with this person to interview people first way before me and tell me what they think. And I value their opinion. And there were two people for this job, one with a very stellar resume, one with a good resume, but not a like great stellar resume. And they picked the person who had the good resume, but had, again, these traits. Had, as we turned out later, like took a train from Indiana, like slept on the train,
wow,
wore the suit that he was going to wear in the interview on the train, took the train back the evening. That person has been with me for 9 years, right? And now you could say, well, of course, you know, like that is the person you should hire, but it inherently wasn't what I thought when I started this business.
Yeah.
And my mindset has totally changed on what I'm looking for now.
Yeah, that's very interesting. That's really interesting. It does show dedication, right?
Yeah, well, it shows the dedication of the person, right? Yeah. That they're willing to, you know, of course, like now you put that on paper and you're like, okay, you have a choice of someone who takes a train, you know, sleeps in their clothes, works at a door factory, really wants to do political work and is going to do anything to do it, is going to work really hard and is committed to learn, right? That's of course who you'd hire, but you don't always see that picture as clear when you're doing interviews. So it's listening to the people you work with, having that those hard conversations. That's the other thing that I will tell you that I think become better about over time, but it's taken a while, is to, you know, like have those difficult conversations and have that upfront with employees. And when there's a concern or an issue, to tell them right away. Again, these are things that sound obvious now. When I was starting this business, they weren't obvious to me because, frankly, I was a political campaign manager. I was an employee. I was never trained as a business owner. And so I had to give myself my own training to become a better business owner. So I was part of EO. I'm now part of a group in DC called Cadre that you're also a member of. And like learning and listening to other business owners on how they work. And frankly, ones outside of my industry, outside of the advertising industry, outside of the political and advocacy advertising industry, and finding people who run other businesses really to learn from. That to me has been a big eye opener and has made me be a much better business person than I started out being.
Yeah, shout out to Cadre. It's a great organization. Melanie and Derek, who run it, are fantastic people. People in it they've recruited are just stellar. So I'm just going to change topics for a second, because you know we got the political genius in front of me. So can you tell the listeners what are the secrets of a strong campaign?
So I would say that a strong political campaign, whether it's an advocacy campaign or a campaign where you're helping someone run for office, is really about clarity of message, right? And really understanding what you're trying to do and why you're trying to do it. So if you're a candidate, this is pretty simple, right? Often people have been tripped up by asking a simple question, why are you running, right? You have to be able to define that. I will also say in politics, it's a comparative world. You have to say in less than 10 words, why vote for candidate A and not candidate B? And so the same thing comes to like advocacy. If you're trying to pass a piece of legislation, why is it important that this piece of legislation pass? And why is that important? Or why should we prevent this piece of legislation from being passed? And what is the alternative? What happens if the legislation doesn't pass? Why is this important? And thinking about those basic things is where you need to start. And I think often people don't start there. So You know, I've been training people to run for office for a really long time. It's something I teach a lot and train people how to be better candidates. And this idea of really understanding the why are they doing this, is the beginning of what makes a successful candidate and not.
Mm. So what have you seen as the big mistakes people make?
Well, I mean, running for the wrong reasons as a candidate, or, you know, running because, you know, purely because you don't like the person that you're running against. You know, it's two sides of a coin. You have to have a reason for voters to vote for you and vote against your opponent. It actually has to be both. You can't run, it's very hard to win a race where it's like, hey, I'm great and my opponent is great too. Pick one, right? You have to show a reason. Like, and even in a primary where there's 8 or 10 people running for office, there has to be a defined reason that you create as a candidate on why people should vote for you. What is the difference you're going to make? I like candidates to think of voters going to a voting booth and having a defined question in their mind. I want a candidate who will, and what is that thing, right? Defining what that is. Is it, you know, what is the issue? Who will fight for COVID relief? Who will make government work for me? Who will lower my taxes? Whatever that issue is, you want to make sure that you're defining your message around what the answer to that question is. So things like that. I could go into a lot more detail about it, but that gives you a place to start.
So given the COVID situation, how do you think that has changed the ability to run a strong campaign? I mean, what do you think how does the future look?
Well, I mean, I would say, you know, it makes that message even more important because you have such a limited amount of time to reach people. I think it has changed how people engage with politics and engage in advocacy too, right? That so much is being done via Zoom these days. You have to get, whether it's lobbying a legislator that is done via Zoom, or whether it is meeting a voter, you're somehow figuring out how to get them on a Zoom call, right? You're not knocking on their doors as much as you used to, right? It's very rare now that you're doing that. So it just changes the way you reach people, how you get in front of them, and it changes the urgency of clarity of a message. And again, what you're gonna find is the candidates and the issues that have clearer messages are gonna be that much more important. I mean, when it comes to advocacy, it's not about the issue mattering. It's also about it falling higher on a level of importance, right? An issue can matter, but if it's not really, really important to the constituent, they're not going to care as much. They're not going to be willing to call their legislator, ask them about this issue. So it's a hierarchy of what it matters. And same thing with a political campaign, right? It's not just about voters turning out. It's about them remembering to vote all the way down the ballot for this local office and giving them a reason to vote in that local office, right? When they're filling out their ballot on their kitchen table, right? It's that urgency that you have to create among voters or constituents.
So what did you say the sense of urgency is right now in the...
I mean, for specific issues, I mean, there's a lot of urgency, right? So if you care about, like, I mean, for instance, if you have a small business in which, let's say you're in the hospitality industry and you care about COVID relief, there's a huge sense of urgency to get funding and engagement around your issues, right? So what you're finding is that there are some issues that are really rising to the top and others that are not, due to the economic crisis and issues that we're dealing with right now.
So, you know, you were talking about being an entrepreneur. What do you think the secrets, when you look at all the years you've been running your company and it's been growing, and what are the secrets to being a successful entrepreneur?
Well, I think it's to listen, right? I think it's really to engage and to listen to your employees and then also listen to your clients, right? And it's really in connecting with them. And it's knowing that, you know, and you have to like try and see around corners as best you can of what is happening next, right? I had no idea when I had like started this business. I always felt like the way to engage and build a creative product was to sit across the table and sort of work things out. And now over the past year, I've been doing creative meetings over Zoom calls. I never knew that that would be able to happen, and it's happened. It's been great. And I always felt like I needed to have physical office space. And now I realize I don't need to have that anymore. So it's understanding and when things change, being able to move with that. And then, you know, finding other sort of people who are doing work that you find interesting and asking those questions. The other thing that's been fun about it, being an entrepreneur, is I've like been able to, you know, dabble in different things. I didn't know that I would, having a podcast would help my business, but it has. I didn't know that blogging, for instance, would be an interesting way to engage or connect with people, but that's been great. So like content marketing, this tells you what a big geek I am, has become a hobby of mine, right? And so I've been working on content for a really long time. And now I have clients coming to us asking about how do you do user-generated content or video content? How do you create that in interesting ways? And so those things that I found interesting have become interesting to clients, but, and you try and figure out the, you know, way sort of that works as an entrepreneur. You know, we've published a ton of stuff on our blog over the years, but we've done nothing really when it comes to affiliate marketing. So that's something now that we're working at and saying, all right, so we have all these different links to different products. Is that something we should be looking into? So it's thinking as an entrepreneur and having that mindset all the time and thinking of what are ways that you can do interesting things for clients or find interesting sources of income. It's a journey.
Mm-hmm. So for the audience, could you explain what affiliate marketing is?
So affiliate marketing is like when you have like a link on your website and you can connect it to a product that someone could potentially buy. And again, I'll tell you, we're at a very early stage of doing this or optimizing that for our company, but that's something we're really looking into. But it's, and again, you want to disclose, you want to let people know that you have these links on your site, but it's pretty a common occurrence right now for other businesses to do that. This is something new for us to do as a business.
So how did you make it get growth for your podcast and for your blogs?
So, I mean, the blog came first. We've been doing it for 7 years, maybe eight. So since 2003, right? Or not 2003, sorry, 2013. So I'm skipping a decade, but it's okay. I only started the business in 2009. Have to forgive me, right? But 2013 is when we started blogging. And really it was just me and a few employees writing what we thought about. And then I really started digging into the idea of writing about specific keywords that people in my world would care about. So for instance, you know, we now rank for a lot of keywords around advocacy and politics that are very specific, right? That we write blog posts around. Then when people search for those keywords, those terms, they then find us as a business. And then we have some very large specific pieces of content that we've created off of the blog content. So eBooks, infographics, those of all things that we've built over time, as well as different lists. We have a list of 100 campaign and advocacy tools that we curate. So those are all things that we've done over time, and it gets thousands of downloads a year that people come to and engage on this content and then engage with us. And then the podcast came out of just me working. One of the things we do as a company is we do political and advocacy training. And we actually have a training coming up at the end of this week that we do twice a year that is a sort of brand within a brand called TCW Advocacy that's specific on advocacy training that we have folks from groups and organizations all over the country virtually come into this training. And through that training, we really had taught people. We also do training for political groups and have taught political organizations how to run better campaigns. And through that training work, we're like, oh, wonder when podcasts really started to take off. And frankly, this was like the winter right before COVID. We're like, hey, we should start doing a podcast. And then literally we launched it February of 2020 is when we launched the podcast. And so this is, we're now in the midst of, we've done two seasons of podcasts. We started by saying, hey, we're going to do 10 episodes. And that became like 16 episodes for the first season. Then we're now into the second season. And we're about to start developing the third season. So we did a season on politics. Then we did a season on advocacy. We're about to go back to a season on politics again. And it's just been a steady sort of climb of word of mouth, of trying to grow the podcast, get good guests who have a following, but then also try and find people. We actually highlight a lot of people who are not typically on podcasts, but are experts in our field, in our world, and but have a good following. They're just not typically on podcasts.
Interesting. So can you highlight some of the ones you've had recently that come to mind that are not typically on podcasts? But
yeah, I mean, and it runs the gamut, right? Like, so I think the first guest we ever had for the podcast was Anish Parker, who's a former mayor of Houston, who, you know, she's occasionally on podcasts. She's well-known. She was former mayor of the fourth largest city in America, right? But she also is the president of the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund, who's a client of ours. I've trained openly gay and LGBT candidates across the country to run for office for the past 20 years. So it's something near and dear to like our company's mission. And so that was the first guest we had. Then we're now sort of into the second season. So Courtney Snowden, who's the former deputy mayor of Washington, DC, who is done some advocacy training work with us. She is a lobbyist and is on the podcast talking about lobbying. So in the advocacy world, so you name it, right? We have had lots of different folks. We have Eric Sanchez, who is sort of a social media whiz, who is famous for getting Kenny Loggins to play in his living room.
Oh, wow.
He talks about that. So it's, I mean, the good news too is it's a variety of different topics that, yes, it's politics and advocacy, but if you're into the corporate world and into running a business, you would find something. Or if you're into figuring out how do we engage audiences, it would be some, we have a pretty wide, it is pretty focused around sort of the niche of politics and advocacy, but I've also have like friends of mine who aren't in that world as well, who find it to be entertaining. We did, you know, an episode on, you know, Kanye's run for president, and just the idea of independent candidates running and what does it mean. So we try and take some stuff that is current, but most of the content is evergreen that you could listen to, you know, like a year from now, a couple of years from now, and get real good engagement from it.
Perfect. I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
I do the same thing with this podcast. I like a wide variety of content, different kinds of people that can describe how they run their businesses in different ways. We have a lot of startups and technology transfer groups that listen to our podcast, as well as some investors. So this episode, for example, on how do you run a strong campaign and how do you hire people? I think we have some nuggets here for people. So what do you wish you knew before you started your company?
I mean, I wish I knew how much focusing on hiring was important, right? Wow. I also wish I knew about like thinking about the right clients to choose, or also, I mean, I think I was good about that, but I wasn't as good at it right now. I think finding that fit of clients that fit you is so super important. And when you're starting a business, I don't think it's not predetermined in your head that you should be saying no to clients, right? Yeah. That you should be saying, hey, you're just not the right fit for me. And that's okay. And so we've I've done that quite a bunch where I've, you know, chased after business. I'm like, you know what? This isn't the right fit. Go talk to this person. And I think that's okay. And I think you have to give yourself as a business owner freedom to turn down business. And that might sound really counterintuitive, but it's finding the right clients for you that's so important.
So is there any other last nuggets you'd like to leave the audience with today, Joe?
Well, no, I mean, I think we got through a lot. I'll see if folks want to get a hold of me. Like the website is thecampaignworkshop.com. If folks are interested in checking out the podcast, it's How to Win a Campaign, wherever you find your podcasts, and it's on Apple, Spotify, all of that, check it out. And again, I just want to say thank you for giving me the opportunity to chat with you today.
Oh, you're welcome. I just want to kind of highlight some of the key points that you made today. So for a strong campaign, you have to have know why are you running. There should be clarity of messaging. The issue has to be really important. So you have to kind of weigh, is it the most important? You need to create a sense of urgency and have a good reason for running. In hiring, peer interviews matter. That was a major thing. And don't just look at the paper. And then for good entrepreneurs, listen to your employees and clients, see around the corners. And when things change, just go with the flow and you'll have to be able to pivot. Get the right fit of clients. Don't be afraid to turn down business. And some of the growth tips, writing about keywords, finding out what people are actually interested in. And where do people find your tools, the hundreds of tools that you...
Yeah, so they're all on the blog. We have like a list of eBooks. We have 11 eBooks we've published. We have the tools list that's up on the blog. So if you go to thecampaignworkshop.com, you'll find sort of the on the navigation bar blog, and you'll also see all the eBooks and check it out there.
And don't forget thecampaignworkshop.com. All right.
You got it.
Thank you so much, Joe. Appreciate your time today.
Hey, thank you.